Today's episode of Dog Nation Daily is brought to you by Harris Cherokee Resort. Find us online at caesars.com/harris-cherokee.
Presented by DogNation.com, this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
So I got a chance to hear something yesterday that was music to my ears. You got to understand something. Here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Harris Cherokee Casino Resort, when we first started doing the Gator Hater Countdown, this would have been back 2016 season after kind of a long stretch of losses for Georgia to Florida. With all of that going on back then, the thing that we really craved was for Georgia fans to view Florida as the program's biggest rival. Now, not to sound immodest, but I feel like we've done a pretty good job of laying out the case over the course of the last few years. And while Georgia has a lot of rivals, and we'll hear from Kirby Smart on that coming up in a moment, given all of that being true, I think we've certainly done a pretty good job of illustrating why we think the Gators ought to be numero uno, if you will. And not everybody agrees with that. We'll never change everyone's mind. But I think we've done a pretty good job of making our case on that. But ultimately, the thing that I really wanted was, beyond just Georgia fans viewing Florida as the biggest rival, I wanted Florida to unquestionably view Georgia as its biggest rival. And the reason why I wanted that ought to be self-evident. It's simple. That if Florida views Georgia as its biggest rival, that means, must mean, that Georgia must be a real problem for the Gators, must be preventing them from doing things that they want to do, achieving a status that they want to achieve. And lo and behold, that's kind of the place we find ourselves in right now. Not the case back in the 90s. Maybe as painful as watching Steve Spurrier beat up on the Dogs back in those years is to also hear Florida essentially treat Georgia as an afterthought rivalry. They were far more worried about Bobby Bowden and the Seminoles of Florida State back then, not worried nearly enough about Georgia, and why would you when you're winning the games as big as Florida was winning most of those games by. That's water under the bridge now. Things have changed. Georgia's established itself, and Georgia's put itself in the preeminent position here in the world's largest outdoor cocktail party. What Georgia has enjoyed, Florida wants. And with that in mind, Florida seemingly now views this rivalry the way that a Georgia fan of myself has kind of always hoped that they would, as that game that they got to win and that opponent that they just hate because of the success that is enjoyed. Perfect example of this, Tyree Cleveland, a good Florida wide receiver, a part of a position group that's a challenge for Georgia on Saturday. He goes on the Paul Feinbaum show yesterday. Paul asks him how he feels about Georgia as a rival. Is it your biggest? And Cleveland gave an answer as a Georgia fan that is music to my ears. I think you'll like it too. Take a listen.
How do you as a player view Georgia? Is that your biggest rival?
Most definitely, because the last 2 years they beat us. They say they owned us, they beat us, they can keep beating us. And, you know, I feel like that's a big rivalry for me personally. I just want to just go out there and just show the world, you know, we can beat the Bulldogs.
So listen, you couldn't ask for better than that. You couldn't hear anything that sounds any better than that. They owned us last year. They keep beating us. I want to go out and show the world that we can beat the Bulldogs. I mean, think about where you were back during the Urban Meyer era, whatever stage of life you might have been in, where you were in the Steve Spurrier era, whatever stage of life you might have been in. Wouldn't you have loved at that point in time to be able to fast forward to the future, flash ahead, hear one of Florida's best players say, man, we just got to go out there and prove we can do this against Georgia. People say we can. People say that this is an opponent we can't beat. We just got to go out there and prove that we can do that. And to hear Cleveland saying that now just kind of goes to show you how much the Georgia-Florida rivalry, the world's largest outdoor cocktail party, how much it's changed in recent years. I think that's a really good thing. Of course, here's the thing that Georgia fans will also know, though, which is that the bragging rights on all of this, what Georgia did in 2018, what Georgia did in 2017, previous coaching regime even back then, the bragging rights on all that expires this week. We love doing our Gator Hater Updater. We love celebrating the fact that it's been however long it's been since Florida's beaten Georgia. But this week, it's not about resting on your laurels and appreciating what you have done. It's about putting that status on the line once again. So admittedly, when you hear Tyree Cleveland say, Man, they owned us last year. That sounds good, but it only reminds you of the task at hand for Georgia this Saturday, which is to go out and do some owning of Florida once again. And with that in mind, you know, Kirby Smart's never going to quite treat this the way that I wish he would publicly. Privately, I think he goes about this a different way. But publicly, he's never going to match Tyree Cleveland's words or anybody else's words, my words. Florida, the rivalry matters more than any other. Kirby Smart, for the most part, when it came to this subject a little earlier this week, he kind of downplayed the entirety of the thing, which, even though I don't believe it's true, as a coach, I understand why he has to say it this way. Here's Kirby Smart.
I hate to say it, but there's all rivalry games. When you make one more important than the other, it devalues the others. I mean, this is a tremendous rivalry in all of college football. The fact that it's in a neutral site, it's in Jacksonville, which is closer to South Georgia, it's important to all Georgia fans. It's important to all Florida fans. It's one of the biggest rivalries in college football. So, for me, it's special because of where it's located, where the game's played, and usually what the outcome determines.
So, listen, if I could write a script for Kirby Smart, that's not the script I would give him. I'd give him a script very similar, almost the coin flip opposite of what Tyree Cleveland said. I'd have Kirby Smart say, yeah, Florida's our biggest rival. We owned them last year. We want to own them again. If I was writing a script for him, that's the script that I would give. Obviously, though, I understand why Smart's not going to say it that way. I do think he's a master motivator. I do think that he's really good at knowing when to turn up the gas, usually right before the game, where to turn that gas up, usually privately. And my guess is he'll be having his team ready to go out there and have that rivalry mindset on Saturday against Florida. It's just kind of nice to know as Kirby gets ready to do that, the team on the other side, they feel the way that they should be feeling. They know that Georgia's been a thorn in their side, an obstacle in their path, and on Saturday's game, you hope that's the case once again. Let me kind of transition, though, and talk about something different for a moment. And this is kind of a think out loud type exercise. Admittedly, the conclusion I'm going to draw, maybe not completely backed up by science and math and numbers, I'll grant you all of that, but I am curious of your thought on this. In some form or fashion, the question we all want to know the answer to this week is Georgia going to beat Florida? That's right. I mean, everything we discuss in the show this week kind of boils down to that. Does this make it more likely or less likely that Georgia beats Florida? We all kind of get that. But what if the question was a little bit different than that? I was thinking about this because I noticed that the point spread for the Georgia-Florida game at one point in time, what, 6 when it opens, kind of gets down to about 3.5. Now at most of the betting houses online and in Vegas, kind of wherever the market leaders are on this, it's kind of back up to that sort of 6 number again. So no matter where you kind of look at this, Georgia is favored, but the game, for the most part, is expected to be close. And when you see Florida, what it's done this year, when you see Georgia, what it's done this year, for the most part, that's kind of what you think it would be. But that really hasn't been the history of this Georgia-Florida rivalry. We haven't had a close game, a game decided within, what, less than 2 touchdowns since. You got to go back to, what, 2013 for that? And then you had a series there kind of at the end of the Urban Meyer era, the Will Muschamp era, where these were close games. It was kind of back and forth, narrow margins of victory. But prior to that, you had Urban Meyer, for the most part, kind of dominant, winning those games. For the most part, kind of big margins. You had a version of that during the Steve Spurrier era for Florida. Then you got a version of that for Vince Dooley. We kind of remember the 1980 game, which was close, but a lot of those Dooley wins over Florida were not close games there at all. For whatever reason, Georgia-Florida has kind of not really been always that close of a rivalry. A lot of these games have not been narrow margins of victory. So let's change the question here a little bit this week. What if the question wasn't, which of these two teams is most likely to win? And what if the question became, which of these two teams is most likely to win easily? Now, just because it's been blowouts in the past doesn't mean it has to be a blowout on Saturday. Vegas doesn't think it will be. But if this game were to follow the same path that previous Georgia-Florida games have over the last few years and a couple decades before that, which of these two teams is most likely to get a comfortable win? Now, when Kirby Smart thinks about getting a comfortable win against Florida, one of the things that he knows is that his defense, which has been dominant for the most part this year, has to go out and dominate a group of Florida playmakers offensively that probably bring more to the table than most of the teams that Georgia's played thus far this season. He was certainly complimentary of that group when he spoke about them this week. Here's Kirby again.
They're talented when they look at, throwing the ball, physicality, ability to run the ball with the quarterback. I mean, there's not like there's an area that they're missing. You would say the offensive line is probably younger than it was last year, having the draft pick, you know, the guys they had. But those guys aren't rookies anymore. I look at it and say those guys have played almost a complete season now, and they're playing at a high level because their quarterback's been able to protect him and throw the ball at him. I mean, when you got the wideouts, they got out there sometimes. It doesn't matter how long you protect because they get open pretty quick, and they beat some man-to-man situations against good teams.
I mean, that is certainly true what Kirby Smart says there, but when you look at the stats, and Mike Griffith wrote about this at DogNation.com this week, they're only averaging 32.5 points per game. They're only running the ball for about 142 yards per game. When it comes to, you know, total offense overall, that's not all that impressive either, just 419 yards per game. Now, typically I don't go for the total offensive numbers and yards and points. Those can be misleading, but is this Florida offense really the kind of offense that's going to blow out Georgia? We've seen Georgia blown out before. The recipe for that typically, though, is Georgia giving up a bunch of rushing yards and not getting very many of its own. But this Florida team this season, good defensively, not necessarily great against the run, and not necessarily dominant with its own running game. So, as I said before, this is kind of a think out loud exercise, not necessarily all that predictive for what's going to happen on Saturday. But if the question became beyond just who's going to win, but who's the most likely to follow the path that this rivalry has traveled the last couple of decades and win easily, would you really say that Florida is the most likely team to win easily? Certainly seems like Georgia might have the easiest path to the easy win, using its running game, which has been effective. Florida not necessarily great at stopping that, and continuing a path that it's been on the last couple of years. 19 points a year ago, 42-7 the year before that. Ultimately, this game could just be different. It could just be two more closely, evenly matched teams. But if it's not, I think that's a game that does play a little bit more into Georgia's hands. We'll see how it all goes on Saturday. My name is Brandon Adams, and this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Hello to you, and thanks for being with us. Live on video today, 10 a.m., Dog Nation Facebook, YouTube, Twitter. We're the radio at noon on Athens Sports Radio 960 The Ref. And we're available as a podcast wherever you find them, including the world-famous DogNation.com. And we're brought to you today by Harrah's Cherokee Casino Resort. Of course, you know my friends there. I've been kind of bragging about them for a while now. And they've got two properties to get to. The cool thing is, very close to Atlanta. Both the properties, just about a three-hour drive from Atlanta, really less than that. What about Harrah's Cherokee Casino Resort and Harrah's Cherokee Valley River? Now, both of these properties, you know, you really roll out the red carpet. Huge gaming area, very nice hotel. Harrah's Cherokee Casino Resort also has a gigantic, just entertainment space, 10 dining options, the whole nine yards is all there for you. And coming soon at both these properties, The Book. That's right, sports gaming coming to the Harrah's Cherokee Casino properties, both at a Harrah's Cherokee Casino Resort and Harrah's Cherokee Valley River. I'll give you the website, but it's also probably a pretty good Google search there as well. Just simply go to Caesars.com/Harrah's-Cherokee. /casino/the-book, or you can just simply search Harrah's Cherokee The Book, and I'm sure it'll get you exactly where you need to go. Really excited about that coming up. Also excited about seeing so many of you this weekend for our Dog Nation Invasion in Jacksonville. Of course, that's all brought to you by our friends at Kroger and R.S. Andrews and Peach Pass. Can't wait to be a part of our luxury all-inclusive tailgate for those of you going to be a part of that. Can't wait to see a bunch of Gator Hater t-shirts really ruling the day in Jacksonville this weekend. It's going to be good stuff. We'll get Mike Griffith in a minute. Before that, though, let's go around the doghouse today, brought to you by our friends at Engineered Solutions of Georgia. And I want to keep the Georgia-Florida talk going, as you might imagine. And I thought it was really cool to hear Kirby Smart, who admittedly is probably a bit of a guy who would prefer the Georgia-Florida game to one day be played in Athens again. Certainly with that in mind, though, he certainly understands what can make this game kind of special. The magnitude of the rivalry, the feeling of this game inside Jacksonville. Thought it was cool to hear Smart talk as much about that this week as he has. So as a part of our Around the Doghouse brought to you by ESOG, let me let you hear a little bit of Kirby Smart on that point.
That's what makes it a rivalry, you know. You got so much at stake. So, I mean, I really don't think that it would matter if it was about the SEC East or not. It's Georgia-Florida. So that in itself carries a lot of weight. The game, the history, the tradition, the fact you have a Hall of Fame for the game alone, and players can be remembered for their performances in that game alone, is pretty big. But the SEC East is always, you know, it weighs heavily into this game. I wouldn't say it determines it all the time.
So a lot of division implications. As Kirby said, there's a Georgia-Florida Hall of Fame. You don't have that for a lot of regular season games. And Smart went on to say, the feeling inside the stadium before the game kicks off is really unlike any other that Georgia or probably any other college football team plays. Here's more from Kirby.
That's probably the most unique thing is the split 50-50 because it's weird. You know, you have a weird feeling in there sometimes. It's so different. This, it, I call it a pro mentality because people aren't – there's no, like, student section. They're chanting for you or against you when you come out of warm-up. It's not like that. The atmosphere in pregame is very different. It's a different feel because when you go out pregame at a road game, it's like I'm in enemy territory. When you go out in your place, it's you're in friendly confines, but there's a lot more energy and buzz. And it seems like at this game, the times I've played in it and coached in it, it's more flat in warm-ups, and then all of a sudden, boom, you come out for the game, and everybody's in their seat. They come in at the same time as opposed to being in there early.
Good description from Kirby Smart of what the game's all about, what it feels like for coaches and players. And I tell you, you hear him talking. I've heard from so many Georgia fans this week, man. Cannot wait to be in Jacksonville on Saturday. Looking forward to that. Around the Doghouse, presented by our friends at Engineered Solutions of Georgia. You know, ESOG is a solutions-based company. So when it comes to issues facing your foundation, your waterproofing stuff, maybe some water creeping into your basement, having a solution to that problem is really important. Sometimes those are simple, easy fixes. And if so, ESOG can provide that for you. Oftentimes, though, it's a more complicated issue. And let's face it, when it comes to a foundation type thing, that can oftentimes be the case. Well, if that's true for you, even more of a reason to reach out to Engineered Solutions of Georgia, because they have two full-time engineers on staff and they can help get your house, the structural integrity of your home, they can return that to the status that it's supposed to be in because they've dedicated their life to being good at that kind of stuff. They also offer an unbelievable, a fully transferable triple protection warranty on materials, installation, and design. So it's a great deal to reach out to my friends at ESOG, and you can call Engineered Solutions of Georgia right now. Simply dial 678-ESOG now. That's 678-ESOG now. Dial Engineered Solutions of Georgia at that number, and they'll take really good care of you. Good to have you with us here today. It's Dog Nation Daily, presented by Harrah's Cherokee Casino Resort. Hope you enjoy Mike Griffith right now.
From Athens and across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
We'll say hello to Mike Griffith and bring him in here on the conversation, Dog Nation Daily, presented by Harrah's Cherokee Casino Resort. And, Mike, before you joined us, I kind of told the audience that I'm kind of thinking out loud here for a moment. This is not necessarily a fully formed idea, but when you look at the recent history of Georgia-Florida, or really even when you look at the long-term history of Georgia-Florida, you know, this year the odds maker is expected to be a close game. Georgia is favored, have been throughout the week. At one point in time, a six-point favorite, then down to about a 3.5. Maybe now back up to about 6 or so again, but the one consistent there is that Georgia's been favored, but not necessarily by a wide margin, kind of less than a touchdown for most of the week here. Vegas is expecting this one to be a closer game, but the history of Georgia-Florida is not necessarily a lot of close games. You know, I guess when you head towards the cocktail party this weekend, what are you expecting? A game that feels like two top 10 teams evenly matched, or a game that feels a little bit more like the Georgia-Florida games of the past, which is one team typically just better than the other?
Wow. Well, you know, there may be one team better than the other one, but as we saw with Georgia-South Carolina, it's who plays better than the other one. I'll tell you what, I think the thing that gets overlooked a little bit is how good both of these defenses are. I expect this to be, I know Georgia fans don't want to hear it, but you know, we could be sitting there 0-0 halfway through the second quarter. This looks to me to be another one of those physical, grinded-out type of games, neither coach wanting to make a mistake. We know that Kirby is going to be patient with his run game. And, you know, Dan Mullen tries to be balanced. Now, they haven't been as balanced this year. They have been more effective with their pass game. I expect to see a short, controlled Gator pass game, a high-efficiency game, maybe some receiver screens, some slants. They have this nightmarish matchup with this 6'6", 239-pound tight end that no one seems to be able to cover. So I'm expecting kind of a field position, grind it out, and then some explosive play happens. I don't know, special teams, turnover, pick six, fumble. And that kind of ignites the fuse, and we see a frantic fourth quarter finish.
So that would certainly be an interesting way to watch this game play out. And admittedly, I'm coming at this from someone who obviously wants to see, you know, Georgia win this game. I guess the one thing I start to take some comfort in as you head towards the weekend is that when you've seen Georgia just not show up for a game, LSU last season, Auburn in November of 2017, when the opponent just got the better of Georgia, the recipe for most of those games was Georgia giving up too many rushing yards and not getting enough rushing yards of its own. Well, you wrote about this at dognation.com this week. Now, typically I'm more into the efficiency stats than the total number stats, but I'll use your numbers for now on this because I do think it tells a story. Georgia has run it better than Florida and stopped the run better than Florida. So if those two trends hold against each other on Saturday, then the idea that Georgia will kind of fall flat the way that it did against LSU in 2018, Auburn in 2017, I don't quite see that happening. And, you know, if that's the case, if Georgia's in at least a fair fight with Florida, then over the course of the game, I think a dog fan has more and more reason to feel confident. Admittedly, this is a story that I've talked myself into as we head towards Saturday, but it does follow the recent path for UGA a little bit.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And especially this team's personality. Here's the thing. This is how Kirby Smart has built this team. He's the general manager, and he's gone out and recruited linemen that average 328 pounds, running back, a deep backfield of runners, and a pro-style quarterback. This is what Kirby wants. This is his vision. And he believes, B.A., that this is the way you win championships. I'll say this, watching Auburn play LSU, I would say Auburn's personality is probably the most like Georgia's in the league with their balance of run. That was pretty effective. They played that game. So Kirby might have the right formula. The question is, can they pass the ball just well enough? Because even if you want to run the ball when you're running into those 7 and 8, and you and I sit next to each other in the press box, we exchange plenty of glances during the Kentucky game. How long can you do that? You've got to have some semblance of a passing game.
Yeah.
Now, to be fair, Georgia lost their top five receivers from last year, their top five pass catchers, and they had arguably their most experienced four guys go down this year at some point. Here's Jackson, Demetrius Robertson with a hamstring, Lawrence Cager with the shoulder, Tyler Simms. So you're 9 down. Now, did they get healthy enough? Did they get enough practice or work on enough scheme during that bye week that they can just provide some semblance of a pass game just to loosen that box up a little bit so DeAndre Swift can get a couple yards downfield before the cut, and then the game plays out as you see it. I do think that the Georgia defensive front has an advantage over the Florida offensive line. I think that's something a lot of people are talking about. The Gators have great receivers. The quarterback makes good decisions. But has Florida played a defensive line and a defensive front like the one Kirby's going to throw at him?
Yeah, I want to get more into the line of scrimmage stuff here in a minute because I think that's a very important part of this game and something else I know that you've written about at dognation.com this week. Let me stay on this topic, though, just for a minute longer because you do mention the offensive stuff. And admittedly, people have heard me or read some of the stuff that I've written. There is a certain quotient to the UGA offense that I think is needed that I haven't seen yet. And this week, Mike, you know, my thing on this is, and once again, this is kind of coming probably more from a place of a fan than an analyst necessarily, but, you know, my thing is, listen, Kirby knows how big this game is. I said on Monday that I thought in terms of what's at stake for him if he loses, it's the biggest game he's coached in thus far as Georgia coach. He knows the stakes. Mm-hmm. He knows, you know, what's on the line here. So I think at a certain extent, he ought to be free to use the game plan that he thinks is best. And, you know, if it doesn't work, then at that point in time, boy, you're heading towards a conversation that no UGA fan wants to have. But for now, you know, I guess it's just sort of appropriate to let Smart take his cut on Saturday how he thinks it's best done and how he thinks it's most appropriate. And this particular opponent, it might play into, you know, the hands of the kind of game that he wants it to be a little bit more, one that is a little bit more about running the football and a little bit more about stopping the run. I totally agree with something you said a moment ago, that you got to throw it a little bit, even against Florida, that's going to be the case there as well. But this particular opponent, given the way these games have played out the last couple of years, you know, this may be the kind of opponent where the sort of dream game plan for Kirby Smart, it might work a little better against this good team than most other typical good teams.
Yeah, well, it could have worked against South Carolina if they didn't turn it over four times and miss two field goals. But that's a complaint for another day. But, yeah, you're right. I mean, Kirby's got to do it the Kirby way. You know, here's two stats. One's going to make you feel good, and one's going to make you feel nervous. You probably covered it, B.A. The team that rushes for the most yards has won 13 games in a row, and that would certainly favor Georgia. Yeah. However, 8 of Dan Mullen's 17 wins at Florida, the Gators have trailed in the fourth quarter. So this is a team that you better put away. You better that pound wearing teams out. It didn't work that way against Notre Dame. Remember, the Irish had the ball at the 48 after the terrible punt by Camarda. You know, and they had a chance to win. You don't want to give Florida the ball at their own 48 with 2 minutes left and Kyle Trask and Dan Mullen. Okay, so if this ground game is to come to fruition, it better do it against Florida, or Kirby had better add that extra touchdown or that extra field goal that makes it a two-score game, or even a three-score game. You know, going back to the SEC championship game, that was a pretty good game plan Georgia had. Mm-hmm. And if Rodrigo Blankenship makes a 30-yard field goal in the third quarter, Georgia probably wins the SEC championship game. You better not miss that kick against Jacksonville. You better put these Gators down. 8 out of 17 Dan Mullen wins. His team trailed in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty interesting stat. Mike, yesterday I talked a lot about Lawrence Cager. I like the stuff that he tweeted. I'm an old pro wrestling fan, so when you're using Undertaker gifts, you're going to go straight to my heart with something like that. And obviously he's important to get back for Georgia. But the point that I made yesterday was, this is beyond just what Cager brings to the table, because I do believe that Cager is Georgia's most effective wide receiver at the moment, with all due respect to George Pickens, who's probably not too far behind, but Cager has just been the most effective at this point in time. However, what I said yesterday is that I believe that receiver is a chemistry position, and chemistry sometimes can be contagious. You know, Fromm and Cager seem to be on the same wavelength, but Cager doing what he's capable of doing, I think, makes things easier for George Pickens. I think it makes things easier for Demetrius Robertson. I think, assuming that Dominic Blaylock's a big part of the game plan on Saturday, I hope that he is, I think it makes things easier for him there as well, that there's a certain momentum that Cager brings for the other receivers to enjoy. So getting him back is about more than just what number 15 provides. It's potentially what he makes available to the other receivers as well.
Yeah, no doubt. There's a chain reaction. If Cager's out there, you know, the best corner's on him, or the safety's, you know, kind of lean towards him a little bit maybe, and as you said, then they can't maybe put as much attention on a guy like a George Pickens or a Demetrius Robertson, or in the coach's mind, to Tyler Simmons. And Kirby talked about what Lawrence meant to the team. You know, I was very fortunate, you know, when Dog Nation sent me down there to Miami, to be able to spend that afternoon with Lawrence Cager and see what kind of guy he was. And I just want Georgia fans to understand, this is a guy that, you know, he had an empty apartment. He came up to Athens, Georgia, with not much more than a dream left, and 1 year to get it done. He had to trust one program to put all the eggs in one basket, and he trusted Kirby Smart. And at the time, J.J. Holloman, you know, was going to be his roommate, was a guy that had recruited him. So Cager didn't even come here to be number one. He knew that Holloman was going to be the guy. For a guy to play through a separated shoulder like he had been doing even before the rib injury, and now to come back or to try and come back, when the NFL for him, his professional future, his means to make a living, is really 2.5 months away. And he's willing to risk it all to come back and play against Florida. I mean, I can't say enough for Lawrence and the kind of kid he is. Young man. You know, he's 22 years old. And I sensed that when I was down there in Miami visiting him before he ended up coming up here at Georgia. He was truly all in on James Coley. Coley's a big reason he's here, because Coley was his coordinator at Miami, and Kirby Smart, who was recruiting him when Kirby was in Alabama. So those special relationships, those things that Kirby and Coley do, and right now everybody's kind of down on them. A lot of Georgia fans have been complaining. But just remember that these men are able to build relationships with guys like Lawrence Cager to get them to buy in. Cager could have gone anywhere. He chose Georgia. They got the right kind of kids coming here. And to your point, if Lawrence can play, could be pivotal.
All right, I'll try to squeeze in an NCAA question before we're done, Mike, on the big news from yesterday. But let me do one more thing before we get there. You mentioned lines of scrimmage a moment ago. You talked about the fact that the long-standing tradition in this rivalry is the team that rushes for more yards wins the game. That's true a lot in football. It's seemingly been a little bit more true with Georgia-Florida. I get that. However, I think I can boil this game down even more succinctly than that. I don't need to know how many yards Georgia rushes for. If you can just tell me right now, write it down on a cocktail napkin, whatever, just tell me how many yards Florida rushes for, I'll tell you if Georgia wins the game or not, because you are not beating Georgia without running the football. Thus far, this Georgia team's been better at stopping the run. You know, Florida, just given all that they can do offensively, makes it a little bit more difficult as you get more stuff to think about. But that particular aspect of this game, Georgia's defensive line of scrimmage against the Florida offensive line, against the Florida running game, if you can tell me right now that Georgia stops Florida's running game, keeps it in check, regardless of Kyle Trask, regardless of Kadarius Toney, regardless of the receivers, just tell me that one fact alone, I can tell you if Georgia's going to win this game or not.
That's tough. That's tough because P. Ryan is a guy that can break off big runs, P.A. Let me ask you this. I'll give you the scenario, and you tell me. If P. Ryan has a 75-yard run, does that necessarily mean that Georgia loses?
Well, I would think that would be very bad news. And understand what I'm saying, Mike. I'm not telling you that Georgia will stop the Florida run. I mean, I think they have a chance to, but I'm not saying they will. What I'm saying is whether they do or not, to me, defines the game maybe more so than anything else, because Florida does have some toys to play with. But you got to run the ball to beat Georgia. So if P. Ryan breaks a 75-yard run the way that he has a couple games this year, that would not be a good sign for me for Georgia's ability to win this football game. You've got to keep that Florida running game in check if you're UGA.
Well, my thought is this. I think Georgia is going to do what they always do and go out to stop the run, and they're going to bring some pressure that we haven't seen yet. You know, remember what they did to Alabama last year. Everybody, Georgia can't pressure. And all they did was knock Tua out. It probably worked against him in that game, actually. But I think Kyle Trask is going to see some heat. Now, what I predict, B.A., is this. I do think P. Ryan is going to break loose. I would predict, if I had to bet, that Florida is going to get a rushing touchdown and probably break a big one. But I don't think they're going to be able to run the ball consistently. I don't think they're going to be able to stay ahead on the chains. I do think they'll get that one big play, but I don't think they're going to make a living with 4 yards and 5 yards. I don't think we're going to see what we saw from LSU. I just don't think their offensive line is good enough, and I think Georgia's front seven is so much better, particularly with those edge rushers. I mean, all the talk about Kyle Trask, I mean, I was standing there last night listening to Monty Rice, and you'd have thought that Monty Rice was the PR agent for Kyle Trask, and it just smelled a little too sweet to me. To hear all these wonderful, because Monty Rice is not a guy of many words to begin with. For him to carry on and throw so many bouquets of flowers Kyle Trask way, you would have thought he was talking about Tim Tebow. So there's a part of me that thinks Georgia has got Trask in the crosshairs, and I think he's going to see a lot of pressure. So there's going to be somebody's band's going to play, and a couple times it's probably Florida, but I think Georgia's band's going to play too. I expect this defense to get to Trask, put him behind the chains, maybe give up a big play or two, but also maybe force a turnover, too. It's going to be that kind of choppy game. I don't think we're ever going to get comfortable and say, oh, yeah, we know who's going to win this.
I've kept you long, but I do want to squeeze in one more thing before we let you go. NCAA makes an announcement yesterday. It's kind of lacking in substance because it's very difficult to know exactly what they mean when they say they're now ready to permit, you know, players to benefit off their name, likeness, image. There's not a ton of specifics involved with what they brought to the table yesterday. The one thing I think we can take from it, though, is the NCAA feels like the winds of change are blowing and the political will is against them, at least for right now, with all the pay-for-play legislation started in California now, I believe 12 other states, a total of 12 states, considering legislation of their own. What did you make of kind of what went down yesterday with the NCAA, what Smart had to say about it, and how, in particular, Georgia will respond to all of this?
Yeah, I think the NCAA wants to get out in front, and what Kirby said specifically is they want it standardized. It's, what you don't want is you don't want one rule for California and one rule for Texas and one rule for Georgia, and in this state you can do this and in this state you can do that. They want this standardized. Now, that's going to be incredibly challenging. Let's be honest, it's already incredibly challenging to keep a level playing field and try to keep track of potential extra benefits all over the country. It's basketball. All you got to do is look at basketball. You know, the kids in basketball are getting paid by the shoe. The schools don't even have to figure in because the shoe companies get to them early enough. And now with these, you know, football recruiting camps, they're able to identify talent earlier. And that means that the people that can make money off the kids are going to get to them before a lot of the college programs will. So the standardization, the concept of the standardization is fascinating to me. The end result, though, in my opinion, is that the rich get richer. The football rich get richer. And that's good news for Georgia, because Georgia is football rich. Georgia is well-connected within their own state. There's a great deal of talent here. Georgia does have the financial resources, whether they use them or not. How they use them is, I guess, that's up for debate over the years. But to me, the rich get richer, and the end result would be that Georgia, programs like Georgia, Alabama, Michigan, Notre Dame, Florida, Texas, the traditional powers, they're the big winners in this. The schools that don't have a lot of talent in-state, or that may not have the finances, the budgets, to compete with the Titans, they're going to be the big losers. And then the extra fallout, what we don't know yet, is how does this affect non-revenue sports? Is this going to be the end of some non-revenue sports at schools that don't make money? Because now they have to funnel more money into how players are paid. Or they can't sustain the budgets to support a gymnastics program, a swimming program, a cross-country program. So to me, is this the beginning of the end for scholarship non-revenue sports? Will those turn into walk-on sports? There's a ton of dynamics to this, but I think Kirby said it best when he said this probably won't be finalized till January 2021, and he's going to worry about a lot more between now and then.
Well, Mike, appreciate your insight on that. Looking forward to seeing you in Jacksonville this weekend. I know you're going to stop by and see us for Dog Nation Invasion. Can't wait to do all that with you. And, of course, between now and then, I know you'll have a lot more to come at DogNation.com. So I look forward to reading that as well. Thanks for being here today. Dog Nation Daily, presented by Harris Cherokee Casino Resort.
Thanks, BA. Have a great one.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
Yeah, I want to have a little bit more on the NCAA thing in a minute. I think the important takeaway is, and I thought Mike said some good things there, I think one of the things you got to correct, though, is there's this belief among some in the media that based on what the NCAA said yesterday, that players can now be paid. It's not quite as cut and dry and simple as that, nor is it obvious that any of what the NCAA said yesterday will ever truly come to pass, and we still don't know what form a lot of this is going to take when it finally does take shape. For the most part, the NCAA announcement yesterday was totally lacking in substance. It was simply a political gesture for them saying, we admit, at least in when it, their view of the public temperature on this is, the longstanding opinion of the NCAA, they now feel like they have lost on the idea of total strict amateurism. Sounds like the NCAA is ready to take the L on that topic, but it's more complicated than a lot of the reports you may have read. We'll have more on this coming up in just a moment. For now, though, it's our SEC Through. Before that, I'm really excited about two things here today. Before the Hedges, presented by Kroger, going on the road this afternoon, we're going to be live at the brand new Kroger right there at Ponce City Market. Like, this is a very, very hip locale right there in the belt, the Beltline in Atlanta. A good-looking crowd of people right there near Ponce City Market. The address is 725 Ponce de Leon Avenue. 725 Ponce there in Atlanta. We'll be there for the show starting at 3 p.m. today. So Jeff Sintel, myself, stop on by and see us. You can talk some recruiting with us. We'll be hanging out doing Before the Hedges live from the brand new Kroger on Ponce, 725 Ponce de Leon Avenue in Atlanta, right there at Ponce City Market, kind of the location. But also, after that's done for us, my kids are coming to this, and Kroger's all throughout the city of Atlanta. It's Moonlight Madness. It's the day before Halloween, as we do this show live on a Wednesday, and Kroger's getting ready for that in a big way. Let me tell you more about this. Really good stuff, especially with potential of rain tomorrow. You can kind of do a little bit of Halloween early. 4 to 7 p.m. at Kroger's all throughout the city of Atlanta. You can enjoy trick-or-treating, cakewalk, cookie decorating, and more. Kroger does this every year. It's a really fun event. My kids are getting dressed up. They're going to be at Kroger here today, and I'm sure Kroger's all near you. You want to be a part of this. This is a really fun kind of day before Halloween thing, and with rain expected tomorrow, a good chance to make sure you get some trick-or-treating in. Now let's talk some SEC stories. I saw where there is a point spread available for Alabama-LSU next Saturday. Crimson Tide favored by 7 points. There's two things I want to say about this game. The fact that Bama's favored by a full touchdown, I know they're playing at home, I get that, but it shows you, I think, something that remains true in college football. I don't have any great pleasure in saying this, but it is obviously true that Alabama in a given year is not always the best team in college football. Last year they weren't. Clemson was the best team in college football. But they are always the hardest team to beat. Not always the best, but always the most difficult to beat. LSU this season could not have been more impressive up to this point in time than it has been. Number one in the AP poll for a reason. And yet going into Tuscaloosa, injured quarterback for the Crimson Tide, Alabama's still a 7-point favorite. Alabama, for the most part this year, has been less visually impressive than LSU has been. For the most part this year, they haven't quite as had as many flex wins as what LSU has kind of put together, nor has it played as tough of a schedule to this point as what LSU has played. But Vegas and the point spread folks kind of know in any given year, the toughest team to beat is Alabama, even for explosive LSU. One more point about this game, which I think is worth bringing up. LSU-Alabama, for the most part, is the exact opposite of what Georgia-Florida is on Saturday. Georgia-Florida on Saturday is kind of an elimination match. Both teams have a loss. Loser has a much more difficult path of, really, you're not going to win the East, you're not going to do anything. I mean, you lose this game on Saturday. In terms of postseason goals, your season's essentially done. Georgia and Florida, therefore, have a little bit of an obligation to be careful during the game that you don't make the big mistake. But for Alabama and LSU, that's a very different storyline. Alabama and LSU have been told by media over the last week or so that two teams in the college football playoff from the SEC, that idea is very much alive on the basis of Oklahoma's loss last Saturday. All of a sudden now, you have these two teams that don't have quite as much at stake. They're fun offenses to watch anyway. In a perfect situation, these two teams knowing that what they're going to do in Tuscaloosa next Saturday is a little bit of an exhibition. Loser of the game can still make the playoff. Given the fact these two teams are fun to watch as it is, that could make for a recipe for a very entertaining game next Saturday. We'll see if Orgeron and Saban truly choose to coach it that way. Let me say something about Auburn for a moment. There's all kinds of turmoil coming out of Auburn here. Fans want Bo Nix benched, worried that Joey Gatewood might transfer. A lot of Auburn fans have been calling for Gatewood to play a quarterback now for weeks and weeks and weeks. I said this yesterday. When you're not a fan, sometimes your perspective is a lot more clear. And for Auburn, it's important to note, they've played a very difficult schedule up to this point in time. Based on the opponents it's about to play, things don't get that much easier. But one thing you should note, every game Auburn has the rest of the season will all take place at Jordan-Hare Stadium. Ole Miss on Saturday, then it's Georgia, then it's Samford, and then it's Alabama to close out the season. Now, getting healthy at home and happy at home, you hope that doesn't come at the expense of Georgia. But in terms of collecting a couple more wins, dangerous at the end of the season against Alabama, for instance, that could still come from Auburn. This is a good team that's played a tough schedule. They've been on the road a lot. They're settling in for some home games. The Auburn we see in November could be a very different team than the one that was scuffling offensively in Death Valley and some of these other, you know, games that's played up to this point during the year. Malzahn's reputation as an offensive coach has been rightly tarnished, but that doesn't mean that Auburn still won't be heard from before the season is done. We'll make that your SEC through. And let me get back to the topic that was kind of interesting and newsy yesterday involving the NCAA here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Harris Cherokee Casino Resort. Let me start with this. I thought that Barstool Sports had a very funny response to all this. Name, profit, image, likeness, being able to make some money off that if you're a player. It seems like we're getting close to that. Barstool had the funny thing from the England World Cup game with the big screen in the bar and showing the EA Sports video game, Orgeron on the cover, everybody cheering. If you're watching on video, you can obviously see that. If you're listening radio and podcast, you may have already seen this on social media anyway. And that kind of was mostly the response to every fan on this. Don't give me the minutiae, the kind of TikTok of what all this means and who's going to make money and the legalese and the logistics. Just let me know, is the EA Sports game coming back or not? That's what the average fan wanted to know, and obviously I'm kind of much the same way. I'd love to be able to play this game with my children. I kind of grew up playing this game. I actually go all the way back as kind of a child of the 90s. I played the old Bill Walsh college football game on a Sega Genesis back around 1993. Don't think I wasn't playing with 92 Georgia on that game all the time, with Eric Zier and Garrison Hurst and Andre Hastings at wide receiver, Shannon Mitchell at tight end. So I go back to, like, I think what was the original EA Sports college football video game, the Bill Walsh college football back in 1993. Enjoyed that back then. Love to see this game coming back. I'm sure many of you kind of feel the same way. And this is obviously kind of a complicated issue for the most part. You know, I think that we don't know where all of this is going, just how much freedom to profit players will have in the future. Certainly the one thing that seems to be kind of off the table is the idea that you could pay a kid to come to your school. It seems like nobody has much of an appetite for that. But in life, there are thinkers and there are doers. A lot of think pieces in the media, Georgia choosing to be more of a doer. I love this tweet from UGA. While we all try to sift through and figure out what all this means, Georgia's just going to go plowing headfirst into what it always does, which is recruit and recruit well. And with the NCAA announcement yesterday, Georgia taking full advantage of that on Twitter. I thought this was really funny. Essentially saying, hey, commit to the G, commit to your brand. And then the caption for the tweet says, grow your brand with the strongest brand, hashtag keep it G. So the idea of players now being able to profit off their brand, Georgia very quickly putting its foot on the gas, saying, we're not going to be a thinker, we're going to be a doer in this case, and we're going to get out there and get in front of this and saying, hey, come over here and make a little money off your brand. We don't know what that means yet, but we do know whatever it is, Georgia says we're going to do that better than other schools are going to do it. So you at least like the fact that Georgia is taking advantage of this in the early going. I kind of thought that was a little bit funny. Kirby Smart, a little bit more serious, though, in his discussion about this yesterday. NCAA loosening the reins on profiting for players. Smart says maybe a little too early to know where this goes yet.
I think they'll do a tremendous job. It looks like to me that they would come up with a proposal somewhere around January 2021, maybe. And that still seems like a long way off in my mind. But we'll have to prepare. Whatever they decide to go with, we'll deal with it. But I don't have enough information to form a complete opinion on it to understand it completely. Our biggest concern as coaches across the country are, is it going to be an even playing field? You know, the biggest concern was state to state, it not being balanced. And if it comes out balanced state to state, then we're all playing on the same playing field.
So let me be semi-serious about this for 1 second. I think that the NCAA has decided that its stance on amateurism is unpopular because they get beaten up by the media on this. And the media, I think, feels emboldened to criticize on this because Twitter eggs them on. You saw the senator yesterday that tweeted the thing kind of pushing back on this. He got like 22,000 responses. Media loves to talk about who gets ratioed on Twitter. I think the media makes the mistake over and over again of assuming that Twitter is an appropriate gauge of popularity or you know, public feelings. But we found out over and over again that for the most part, Twitter's kind of an outlier here. That the idea that this kind of loosened reins on amateurism and kind of a free-for-all where players can profit, even if we think that's the way that things should be, the idea that's popular with the public at large, I'm not quite so sure about that. Politicians wouldn't be pushing back against this unless they thought that their actions were popular with somebody. So obviously we'll see kind of where this goes from here. I think it's way too early to tell on all of that. And frankly, we're a lot more qualified to talk about Georgia, Florida anyway. And I told y'all this the other day. I am really excited about one aspect of Saturday in particular. After our Dog Nation Invasion tailgate, which is just going to be as much fun as anything we've done, Georgia fans fired out of a cannon to be ready for that one on Saturday. Those lucky enough to be a part of that with us and enjoy all the really cool stuff going on there, courtesy of our friends at Kroger and R.S. Andrews and Peach Pass. Did you know that after the game, I'm going to watch the game from the stands, Gatorator t-shirt on, decked out, ready to go, not sitting in the ivory tower with the rest of the erudite media, down there with my people, UGA fans. We're pulling out all the stops for Georgia, Florida on Saturday in the cocktail party. Looking forward to doing it. There's one reason why. The Gatorator Updater, we want to see that number keep climbing. It's 1,096 days today. We'll see you tomorrow, Dog Nation Daily, presented by Harris Cherokee Casino Resort.